Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Good Friday night, everybody. Larry Hardesty in for Chris Carlin. Join me, 1-800-919-3776. That's the number to hang out with us until 10 o'clock tonight. This is going to be an interesting one. A tough loss for the Yankees. They lose game one, as you heard from Steve Lennox in the update, 6-4. Game two, scheduled to get underway shortly, but tarp is just coming on the field. There is weather in the area. All right, so there's a translation that they're expecting some rain, so they want to be ahead of it, so there'll be a slight delay. A little later in the show, we'll chat with Rich Cimini at 8 p.m. We'll get his thoughts on the Jets, what's going on with them, what we can expect, how they look so far, and some other interesting things going on around the Jets. So we'll chat with Rich Cimini next hour at 8 o'clock. You're welcome to join me, 1-800-919-3776. Also, we have our Twitter poll question of the day, at Hardesty ESPN, at ESPNNY98_7FM. Here's your question. Between COVID-19 delays and social justice pauses, what will be the most affected by the stop and start schedule? Will it be the Yankees outfield? Will it be the Mets starting pitching? Will it be the Islanders momentum? Or will it be fan interest? At Hardesty ESPN, at ESPNNY98_7FM, and of course, at 1-800-919-3776. So this is an interesting Subway Series. We talked about it. We touched on it actually last night with both Rich Catino and Christy Ackert of the Daily News, because you had both teams coming in struggling. All right, you had a Yankee team that came into this game, loses a 5 straight. You had a Met team that's been back and forth, up and down, coming off a postponement yesterday with the Florida Marlins to support what's going on with the athletes in social justice. But they had some issues before that. And this was, for the Mets, an important couple of weeks, because you've got Marlins, Yankees, Orioles, Yankees, if I'm correctly thinking of the schedule off the top of my head. So in this part of it, this is the time that you really need to pick up some wins. So over this time period, you can beat a beatable Marlins team, which they had trouble with in the first part of that series. A Yankee team that you weren't really sure what was going on, because you're not sure who you're getting back, that you're going to face against. You're thinking, well, Aaron Judge is going to be in the lineup. He could give a spark to that team. And then, unfortunately for Yankee fans, he has to go back on the IL with that calf strain. And you just look at the lineup tonight for the Yankees and, you know, listen, we understand how successful these guys were last year, right? We understand it. We get it. The Tauchmans and the Fords and all these guys were great. The Wades, great last year. But this is a little different. Because it seems like you've got more people out of the lineup this year than last year. It just seems so strange. All right, Judge, once again, on the IL. Stanton, still on the IL. And I think the big difference for me in looking at this Yankee lineup, and Christy Ackert mentioned it last night, is the fact that you missed DJ LeMahieu. Now, DJ LeMahieu was outstanding last year and hardly missed any games. Okay, so the fact that you don't have him in the lineup, and you're also missing Gleyber Torres. Now, Gleyber Torres was not hitting a lot while he was in. He was struggling a little bit. But still, he was a guy with these players in there. They lengthen your lineup, and eventually they will get on a hot streak and get your team going. And that just hasn't happened because they haven't been in the lineup. So when you look and you look at this Yankee lineup, the starting lineup today, I'm telling you, Gary Sanchez is struggling big time. He's not the only one, but he came up in a big spot in the sixth inning off Dellin Betances, who got the first two batters out, then hit a batter and walked a batter. And you're looking at a spot where possibly just a hit could keep that train going. Keep that momentum going, because then after Sanchez, you've got Ford, you've got Andujar. You know, you had the opportunity that maybe you could get something going there, right? And, you know, because, you know, Yankee fans understand Dellin Betances, and Met fans are learning. I mean, he's a guy who you know, can get you rolling, can get ahead of batters, and then all of a sudden just lose the plate. And he kind of did that today. And so Sanchez, in a very big opportunity, pops up. And it just seemed as though after the four runs, the Yankees just couldn't get anything else going. And Clint Frazier was excellent, as was Luke Voit. They were the guys that did most of the damage at the top of that lineup. You know, Voit led off as leadoff hitter in the first game, went 3-for-4, scored two runs. Clint Frazier had a two-run home run, had three runs batted in. And so those two guys were really excellent at the top of that lineup. But the rest, they couldn't get anybody else to go. So nothing else happened in that lineup. And Chad Green is struggling mightily. He loses a game that Masahiro Tanaka was pitching against Atlanta, and Tanaka was phenomenal. Admitted that he had nothing left in the tank, so Boone had to go to the bullpen. And now without Tommy Kahnle, Chad Green is the guy. He's the guy that's kind of that middle relief type guy that can come in any situation that you need him to. And gave up a two-run home run to Freddie Freeman. Yankees lose that game. Now tonight he comes in, gives up a three-run home run to Pete Alonso. Then gives up a solo shot to Dom Smith. And then gives up a solo shot to Jake Marisnik. And just like that, the Yankees are down 6-4. And they end up losing the game. So a six-game losing streak for the Yankees. They need to come back and try to get something going in this second game. As far as the Mets are concerned, listen, as a Met fan, let's keep rolling. Let's see if we can get some wins and catch this Yankee team while they're struggling a little bit. And see if we can't get them going because... listen, as a Met fan, all you need to know about the challenges of being a Met fan, right, was what happened with Brody Van Wagenen yesterday that we talked about on the show. And now he had to apologize and all this other stuff. And it's just, it doesn't happen to anybody else, right? Why an executive walks into a room where there's a mic, an open mic, a hot mic, and a camera that's rolling. Only the Mets. I'm just telling you, as a Met fan, only the Mets does this happen to. It's just crazy. It is crazy.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Larry Hornstein for Chris Carlin, hour number two of a Friday night edition of the show. Thank you for joining me. Game two of the Subway Series between the Mets and Yankees will begin at 8:40. 8:40 for game two. Mets win game one, 6-4. Let's turn our attention to the National Football League and the New York Jets. We are joined by the pilot of the flight deck and the beat writer for the Jets for ESPN.com. He is Rich Cimini. Hi, Rich. How are you?
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I figured, you know, like Adam Gase says, you're not doing anything. So I figured on the Friday night, I'll have you on.
Yeah, why not? Show up and find out when we're having a scrimmage. So I guess that video got some mileage, but we were actually joking about that, Adam and I and some of the other reporters the next day. So it's all good.
That's good. That's good. Because, you know, you never know, Rich. You never know. You never know. You know what they say. Many a true word is said in a joke. So you just never really know what's going on.
Exactly.
A couple of things, though, Rich. Ira called, and he wanted to get your thoughts on this. I'm going to put it in your hands because you're there every day. The recent acquisition of Ballage from the Dolphins. And what we're hearing, and I've been reading it, and we heard all this stuff about how great Le'Veon Bell looked, but as camp has gone on, I mean, some people have ranked him maybe the second or even third running back in this group. Could this be a move that they're going to try to trade Le'Veon Bell and get something for him, or what do you think?
They can't trade him, Larry. I mean, his contract is immovable. I think his base salary this year is $8 million guaranteed. So there's no way they're going to be able to move that contract. You know, the Ballage thing was a player that Adam Gase liked a lot a couple of years ago in Miami. Showed some promise in 2018. Had a bad year last year under the new regime down in Miami. And so they were going to cut him. You know, he had slipped down the depth chart, you know, with Brian Flores there. And they were going to cut him. And the Jets, instead of, you know, trying to get a waiver claim on him, it's always risky about whether you'd get him or not. In this case, I have to believe they probably would have. The guy averaged 1.8 yards a carry last year. I don't think anyone would have claimed him. But the Jets gave up a conditional 7 for him. And, you know, he'll be their fourth running back. They didn't really have a fourth running back. Last year it was Trenton Cannon, who was really good on special teams, but they cut him. He got a little banged up, and they cut him, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So they were looking for that fourth guy. And so they're really deep at running back now, but that move had no impact, you know, on what Le'Veon's, you know, future is on the Jets.
Rich, what? I didn't know Adam Gase liked running backs.
Yeah, well, I mean, he underutilized him last year. You know, it's, you know, P. Ryan looks good. You know, he's a rookie, mm-hmm. though. And, you know, you're not so sure how he's going to do. You never know. I mean, Frank Gore's career is pretty much established. You know, he looks good. I mean, I got to say that. He's a north-south runner. He hits the hole. He looks like he's got some lateral quickness. When a guy's 37, you just never know. But it looks like he's got some left in the tank for sure. And, you know, to me, you know, Le'Veon looks okay. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, some people are, you know, writing him off, you know, like he's ready for the glue factory. I think you really can't tell with running backs, you know, and unless it's live drills and they're not tackling, they're just, you know, it's like, you know, it's called thud. You know, they hit and they wrap up, but they don't bring down to the ground. Mm-hmm. So you really can't get a good gauge on running backs until it's a live action. And without preseason games, we won't have that live action until week one against Buffalo.
All right, Rich, let's go around the team and see if we can get your expertise on what's going on with some of these guys in some of these positions. Obviously, because of this situation with Denzel Mims, Jets go out, they acquire Chris Hogan. Is he going to affect the amount of catches that Jamison Crowder got? Because for me, Crowder was that possession guy for Sam Darnold last season. Or will they use them as a tandem?
Oh, no, I think they'll, you know, their base offense is three receivers, so I think all three will be on the field mm-hmm. with Crowder in the slot, and then you have Hogan and Perriman. He's looked okay. I don't think he has the separation speed that he once did, but he's got good hands. He's a really crafty route runner, and it seems like he and Darnold are developing a chemistry out on the practice field, but they have no one else. I mean, if the season started right now, I mean, those three guys would be the starting receivers. Mims is, you know, hasn't practiced. And so even when he is cleared to practice, it's going to take him a while to get his conditioning back to be and to learn the plays. So I can't see him being a factor for several more weeks. So all the other receivers are really young. So I think Hogan, Crowder, and Perriman will be there. Three starters in their base offense.
So is this the year then, Rich, that while we're talking about those receivers, is this the year that finally Chris Herndon can stay on the field and be consistent and show the flashes of brilliance that he's shown previously?
Yeah, I hope so, Larry. I mean, he's really had a good camp. He's always had a thing with Darnold. They've always had a really good chemistry, you know, from when they were rookies a couple of years ago. It seems to have carried over, even though Chris really he didn't really play last year at all. So, but they have it. You know, they still have that rapport on the field, and I think Herndon is going to have a good year. I really do. I think he can do a lot of different things. He can block, and you know, Ryan Griffin did a solid job for them mm-hmm. last year at tight end, but he doesn't have the ability to press the seam the way Herndon does. Herndon could get into a deep seam and, you know, occupy the safety in the middle of the field, which is something that they're really going to need because they're going to need those outside receivers who those outside guys are going to need all the help they can get. So if they can have Herndon attracting attention, you know, between the hashes, it's really going to help the rest of the team.
Rich, what have you seen from Mekhi Becton and the play of that revamped offensive line so far?
Yeah, Becton looks good. I mean, again, no live action, but he looks like he belongs. I mean, it's not hard to notice him. You know, when you're 6'7", 370, you kind of stick out a little bit, even among big men. And he's really balanced in his pass sets. He doesn't lunge. A lot of time with rookies, they'll lunge and get caught off balance and just get pushed aside by a much more experienced pass rusher. But he seems to have good balance. I've watched him in some pass rushing drills, and he goes up against Jordan Jenkins a lot. And Jordan's a good pass rusher because he's got really strong hands, and he's relentless. You know, he gives great effort on every play. And so a couple of times he got Becton, you know, with some inside moves, and he just got by him very quickly. So, you know, he's learning Becton. There'll be some growing pains, but I think they have a really good player there.
Yeah, it's good. And the offensive line looks pretty good to you, Rich?
I keep on having to qualify it, but I mean, it's...
Yeah, I know, without pads, and yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, they've been in pads for a few practices. I think McGovern's done a good job at center. I think he's been a real stabilizing person in there. I mean, look where they were a year ago at center. You know, they had Khalil in. He couldn't even get on the field at this point because he was out of shape. He came out of retirement. And so they were using Jonathan Harrison, waiting for Khalil to come in. This time they have their center. He's been there every day. He hasn't missed a rep. I think he's galvanized that line. I think and George Fant has done a pretty solid job at right tackle, too. I haven't seen too many hiccups there. The one concern, you know, Van Roten, that right guard, had an oblique injury the other day. And, you know, I think he's had a couple of shaky practices. So that's the one I would watch. The right guard position could be a little bit shaky for them.
Rich Cimini is my guest. We're talking Jets here on the Carlin Show. Larry Horstein for Chris on 98.7 ESPN. All right, Rich, I've held off long enough. We've talked about, 5 or 6 minutes. I haven't asked you about Sam Darnold. So let's ask you about Sam Darnold, because this is the year, obviously, that, you know, it's year number 3, second year in the offensive Gase. And it's so, I always tell people, it's so hard to qualify because, you know, you see the same defenses. You kind of know it's really great when you have the other team that you look at. As you mentioned, you're not going to have that this year. So based on what you've seen, what does Sam Darnold look like to you?
I mean, he's okay. I mean, he hasn't really jumped out at me like, you know, this is the year or this is, you know, I mean, he's looked okay. I mean, he's had a couple of interceptions, but those weren't until he went several practices without any, and then he had a couple of picks the last couple of practices. He's thrown to wide receivers, brand new wide receivers that change on a daily basis. So you have to take that into account. You know, he's got a new offensive line. You have to take that into account. The coaches say he's processing plays quicker than before. You know, they said, you know, his dropbacks are more decisive. Instead of thinking about the play in the huddle and as he's walking to the line of scrimmage, which he did last year, he's thinking one step ahead. He's thinking about the kind of coverage he's going to get, you know, the kind of checkdowns he might need on the play, you know, if he has to go to a hot read, those sort of things. So it's advanced level thinking for him this year. Mm-hmm. I just haven't seen it translate into like a lot of big plays on the practice field, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen in a regular season.
Right. I hear you. Defensively, Bradley McDougal, what does he look like to you as you've seen him in the various coverages that Greg Williams likes to throw out there?
Well, he'll be the free safety. You know, when they first made that trade, I thought he was going to be the strong safety to replace Jamal. But, you know, he's been lining up exclusively at free safety, and which is a position that he played predominantly last year with Seattle. He has played both, so it gives them some flexibility. You know, they could use him in May back and forth. But McDougal's been in the post, you know, as a deep safety, and he's looked okay. I think the guy who's really looked fantastic is Marcus May. You know, this is a new position for him. You know, Jet fans are used to seeing number 20 about 20 yards off the line of scrimmage, you know, in the deep middle of the field. That's not Marcus May anymore. Marcus is going to be in the box playing strong safety, covering tight ends, basically being Jamal Adams. Now, can he do it as well as Jamal Adams? I don't know that. Jamal was really good at that. So this is a new situation for Marcus, who really has no experience blitzing. I looked it up earlier. He only rushed the quarterback four times last year. So this is a foreign thing to him. So there'll probably be some growing pains, but I really like what I've seen so far.
Which of the rookies have jumped out to you, Rich?
Well, Becton.
Other than
sure.
Becton.
I mean, Becton. Ashton, a lot of the rookies have been hurt. They haven't been on the field. Jabari Zuniga hasn't practiced. Denzel Mims hasn't practiced. Bryce Hall hasn't practiced. Probably Ashton Davis, I would say, Larry. Free safety, third-round pick out of Cal. Greg Williams likes him a lot. And I think he's got some position flexibility, but they're using him primarily as free safety. And he's not going to be a starter for this team right now, but, you know, Greg Williams is a pretty creative coach, and I think he's going to come up with packages where they can use him. He is definitely going to be involved in the defense. I'm not sure which sub-packages, but he will have a role. He is fast. I mean, he was a track guy at Cal, so we know he's athletic. And he plays 100 miles an hour. He's really got that reckless attitude. And he's going to return kicks, too, which should be really interesting. Yeah, I mean, he's done it in practice. You never really know. But he did it a little at Cal, so it's not a totally foreign thing to him. Early in his career at Cal, he did it. So I think he's got a really good chance to be the opening day kickoff returner.
Oh, that's interesting. So, Rich, when are they doing the green and white scrimmage? Do we know? As far as, you know, their padded thing.
Well, there's really no green and white scrimmage this year. They had a scrimmage on, I think, Wednesday. That was an intra-squad scrimmage on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the Giants are having one tonight.
They're having this tonight,
the blue and white scrimmage.
Yep.
The stadium. The Jets are practicing at the stadium on Sunday at 1 o'clock. You know, they're not really calling it a scrimmage. I think it might be more of a practice, but they just want to get the feel for the stadium just to go through almost like a mock game, you know, coaches, you know, with their positions in the press box and on the field, and just to go through all the logistical things that, you know, we as fans and media don't even think about that the team has to go through. And also it'll be like a dress rehearsal for the media as well, because we'll be in a socially distanced press box, you know, covering the practice, and we have to get used to that, and also the post-practice access via Zoom calls. So it'll be a dress rehearsal for the players as well as us sports reporters.
It's a different world, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, it's the season of Zoom, and that's how all our interviews take place now. There's really no personal interviews. There's no locker room access this year. Everything is done by Zoom.
Who's on the flight deck with you?
Well, we haven't had one yet, so we've been ramping up slowly, but we'll get it going as we get really close to the season. The season's right around the corner, and 2 weeks from Sunday, and so we'll get it ramped up. I haven't mapped out the game plan yet, but I've been getting some fans asking on Twitter, and we'll hope to get that, and we'll dive right in, you know, because the roster cuts are coming up on September 5th.
Absolutely.
And then they're into Buffalo. You know, right away they're into Buffalo, and, you know, that's when we'll really start honing in on it.
All right. Well, we'll be waiting to see who's on the flight deck with you, and we'll be following you on ESPN.com as we get closer to what we hope is going to be the start of the football season. Rich, thanks for a couple of minutes, as always, my friend.
Well, let's hope. Thanks, Larry. Take care. Alrighty.
You too. It's Rich Cimini talking about the Jets.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Don't need no education. Hardesty for Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
We don't need no thought control.
1-800-919-3776. Also on Twitter at Hardesty ESPN at ESPNNY 98.7 FM. We just had Rich Cimini on talking about the Jets, and he had, and I've known Rich a long time, he had what I would call lukewarm praise for Sam Darnold. I guess the quote, he said he was okay. You know, nothing to say about he's going to have a heck of a season and stuff like that. He's all right. It's not ringing endorsement. I tell you that. It's not. And it's so interesting because there's other things that he did say that were positive. And that is the fact that looking ahead to your defensive schemes and doing those things instead of focusing in on what the play call is, trying to be able to be that confident in what you've gotten in the play call, and then looking at the next step, and then hopefully being able to then look at the defense and make an adjustment to be able to audible out of that play call, that would be the interesting thing. Look, here's the bottom line. And Sam Darnold has been a very interesting conversation when you talk about the quarterback of the Jets, because there's been so many things that have been around him that he's been unable to control. Okay. And so we look, and obviously in a perfect world, it would be nice if you had a big play, no question, number one receiver who can make that catch for you in a big spot. Be it on a big third down, a third and 10 that you really need to, you know, get that first down because you're deep in the territory. You really want that drive to continue. It would be nice if you had that. But let's be fair. Everybody, every team doesn't have that. So, and there's a lot of conversation when people talk about Sam Darnold and they use it. When we talk about the play of the offensive line, and we talk about the lack of weapons, and we talk about things that they don't have, and people look at it and say, well, these are excuses. Well, they're not really excuses. They're fact. And they're facts in the point of it would make his life easier. It doesn't mean that he's not, we don't expect him to overcome. We don't expect him to adapt. It doesn't mean that we don't expect him to make the necessary adjustments and do what he needs to do that's in his control to move the ball up and down the field and score in the red zone and put points on the board. I mean, that's his job. Okay? Now, would it be easier if he was playing behind a veteran offensive line that he knew that they had his back and he's got their back and they've got confidence that he can sit back there maybe that extra second or 0.5, half second, And that's the difference between getting his guy open. Would it be more comfortable that he felt, you know what, I know this offensive line is good, so I've got the opportunity to not only look at my first and second option, but I can peek at my third option on this play. And then go back to my safety valve. Okay? Would that be great? Absolutely. Especially for a young quarterback. That would be outstanding. But now in his third year, you're looking to see him do what he needs to do. All right? You got bigger. I'll tell you one thing. Mekhi Becton is really playing well from what you see. Sounds that way from what Samidi was talking about. So the left tackle position is good. Right tackle, as he mentioned, might be a little issue. Okay? Might be some issue because of injury. But right now the left tackle is okay. The right tackle, at least he can see. From your right-handed throwing quarterback. He can see what's coming on that side. It's the blind side that you're worried about. And that's why the left tackle makes so much money, because of the fact that, you know, he's protecting your quarterback's blind side because most of your quarterbacks are right-handed. So with what they look like, with what this offensive line will be, and look, it's a work in progress. We have these conversations about what goes on with the offensive line and how they have to, the chemistry and how they have to gel together and so on and so forth. So we know, we understand that. And that comes with reps, rep after rep after rep after rep. And then during the season, that's going to come with, okay, this is what the teams are showing us. We're sliding protection. How do you slide? How's that communication going? Does somebody pick up? Does somebody, all that stuff you work out. And unfortunately, because you're not having preseason games, you're really doing this in practice, but you're doing it in practice against your defense that you kind of know, you kind of get a chance to see, okay, when this guy's in, normally this is the scheme they normally run, or all right, and last time they did this, the safety dropped back off the line, and, you know, so there's little tendencies that you start to pick on and that you get. And so sometimes it becomes counterproductive. And then the other part of it is, quite frankly, you know, your defense is not may not be as good as the defenses you're going to play during the season. So what you're able to pick up against your own defense, you may have trouble against an opponent's defense during the regular season because they got better personnel than you have. So there's a lot of different nuances that go on with your quarterback and how he makes the adjustment with the offensive line, and they build momentum. It would be very helpful to the Jet offense, obviously, to Sam Darnold as a quarterback, if he could get the running game going, whether it's a running back by committee, whatever it is, if he could get the running back going, but if he could get his tight ends, Herndon and Griffin, if he could get his tight ends in a position where they're almost like the number one receiver, if he could get his tight ends in this position where they can make some plays, okay, and they can put you in better down and distances on second and third down to make them more manageable. And then now that kind of frees up your wide receivers and they kind of free up each other, right, as you go down the field. That would be very helpful because here's the thing. And you understand that this Jet team performed very well in the second half of the season last year. They were awful in the first half of the season. And people jump on Le'Veon Bell and his lack of production during the season. But remember, the first half of the season, once Darnold got hurt and the backup got hurt, I mean, you had a quarterback that wasn't really NFL ready. And so obviously they stacked 9-10 in the box. Where's Le'Veon Bell running against 10 guys and the suspect offensive line? He's not running anywhere. That's when they should have put him in the flat. That's when they should have passed him. That's when they should have, you know, thrown the ball to him a little bit to try to break that up. Because if I know that your quarterback is not that good, I dare you to run the. I'm making you throw the football. And so, no, I understand that Le'Veon Bell wasn't great in those early weeks, but how is he going to be? Under those circumstances, couldn't be. So those are the things I'm looking to see what Sam Darnold's going to do. So I'm curious to see how he's going to respond. Once again, you know, he's got that relationship with Herndon at the tight end. He needs to get that relationship, and he has that relationship with Jamison Crowder. He and Crowder made pretty good music together last season. But now it's going to be, can he get in sync with Perryman to get that speed, to get that big play guy that can stretch the field? Can he get in sync with Chris Hogan? And when they got Hogan, the first thing that came to my mind is what Samini mentioned, and that was separation. Would he be able to get the separation that he's gotten in years past? Well, everybody knows he's got great hands. Okay, everybody knows that. But the question is, will he be able to get that separation? Okay, that's going to be key, because if he can, then of course that gives Darnold a chance to put him in a window where he can be successful. All right? I still think of Hogan as going to be, this is my third down guy. If I'm third and six, third and five, third and seven maybe, I'm looking at him. Now, maybe it'll be Herndon at the tight end spot. You know, you don't know. We'll see.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Hour number three. Hardesty for Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. At the top of the hour, Anita March with Weekend Wager on 98.7. Talking to you at 1-800-919-3776. Getting your baseball thoughts, getting your football thoughts, getting your thoughts on the NBA. opening it up in the last hour to talk to you on a number of subjects while we keep an eye on what's going on at Yankee Stadium, where the Mets have a 1-0 lead as they bat in the bottom of the second. Jonathan Loaisiger on the hill for the Yankees, facing Robinson Cano, who knows a little bit about this ballpark, doesn't he? Of course, as you know, Mets won the first game 6-4 of this doubleheader of the Subway Series. Game 3 tomorrow, doubleheader on Sunday. And the Yankees were rolling in game 1, up 4-0. Mets then score 6 unanswered runs. 4-1, Jordan Montgomery out, Chad Green in. 3-run home run to Pete Alonso. Solo home runs from Dom Smith. And, you know, that's what did it. It was crazy. It was crazy. And Marisnik, I'm sorry. And Jack Marisnik, solo home runs there, 6-4. Edwin Diaz with the save. Yes, don't look at me crazy. I did say Edwin Diaz with the save. And so Mets leading 1-0, putting the pressure on the Yankees, who have now lost 6 consecutive games. They are now 16-12. It's crazy. 1-800-919-3776. Tony's in the Bronx. Hey, Tony, you're next on 98.7.
Larry, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, Tony. What's up, partner?
Pretty good. It was a pleasure speaking to you last night. First time I talked to you last night, so that was a pleasure, a treat.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for taking a few minutes here. But so, you know, what I really want to talk about is my Yanks here. I got to tell you something. You know, You just mentioned the 6 in a row and, you know, 6 out of 7 to Tampa. And then Tampa is just like a recluse. And the only reason I'm concerned about it is because it's a short pandemic season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it worries me a lot. Now, well, we got a month left in the season. A month. Now, Judge and Gleyber Torres both are predicted to come back 3 weeks, no longer than 3 weeks right now, with no setbacks. With no setbacks. That's what it is right now.
Right.
And that I heard from the listening to the Yanks, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you this here. I've been thinking about this here. Do you remember years ago, Larry, here, that when Reg, I'm talking Reggie Jackson, when he said that, and it was a whole bunch of conspiracy stuff afterwards, but when he said here that I'm the straw that stirs the drink, right?
Yes, yes.
Now, I think, this is what I'm thinking, and it's been agreed here with a lot of people. I think that Judge is the straw that stirs the Yankees team's drink. I'm telling you right now, it's the straw that stirs the drink. Look, for me, anyways, I don't know. I've been seeing that. I know Voit's nice, solid hot pace there going on, and I appreciate that. I need everything here. But 6 in a row, and here we go again. And we're playing the Rays again next week. And
yeah, I know.
It's 2 out of 3, and it's not like home field advantage means anything because there are no fans.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, you know, I got my Yanks winning the division. There is no doubt about that. I got them winning the division, and I never waver from that.
But you still feel that way?
Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely do. Even more. Because
even
I
more now.
They're going to step up. My kids are going to step up. Everybody's going to step up, you know?
Okay.
And all of them. I mean, I can go down the line on everybody with Sanchez and with Gardner, and I can go down the line. But, you know, to me, I just think it's the same thing that's happened over the years with Orioles and with the O's and with the Rays, how they get hot here. But 6 months is different than a pandemic season.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is just to my salute here and my message to Yankee fans is just stay in tune here because the Yanks will win this division. Larry, that's all I got this night here. Thanks for talking to me with this week, and I hope that I get to talk to you a lot more. That'd be my hope here. So
right, well, I appreciate that, Tony. Make sure you call
I'm
back.
I'm listening the rest of the night.
All right, cool.
Thank you.
Thanks. I appreciate you. All right, thanks for the phone call. Listen, Tony is an optimistic glass half full guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. And in theory, with the guys that are hurt coming back, as long as the Yankees can, as we say, tread water, they should be okay. My concern with them is that they just are not able to do anything with the Tampa Bay Rays. And we knew coming in that the Rays and the Blue Jays were going to be the two teams that would give them some issues. Okay? Toronto got off to the slow start. All right? And, you know, now they're coming on. They're going into tonight. They had won 7 of their last 10. So they're starting to get hot. And the Yankees have not played them yet, so they're going to have a bunch of games with Toronto probably starting next month. You're going to see a lot of Toronto next month if you're the Yankees. I think you're done with the Rays after this weekend, after next week, the three that you have with them then. So I think you're done with the Rays after that. Going into, well, as of right now, okay, as of right now, the Yankees trail the Rays by 3 games. Rays are 21-11, Yankees are 16-12. So, and you're right. This is the scenario that what makes a 60-game sprint is that you really don't have a lot of time to flounder in a losing streak. You really need to try to get out of it. Now that just about everybody's making the playoffs, though, clearly it's not the same urgency as it was as if it was, you know. Well, you need to go win your division, and then, you know, I mean, there's so many teams that's going to be able to make the playoffs. But nevertheless, you want to be going into that postseason playing well. And the Yankees have, and look, the injuries have been well chronicled. Aaron Judge is no question a tremendously important player to this Yankee team. His leadership, his defense, and of course his bat, and his eye. He's got a pretty good eye to play and either walks or gets on base. His on-base percentage is excellent. But, you know, many people will tell you in Major League Baseball that they feel that actually Gleyber Torres is going to be the guy that will be stirring that drink in the near future. That he is the guy that is the Yankee future. That he is the guy that's going to be the big star on this Yankee team. And they might be right. And it might just be because of availability. But listen, there's no question that when Aaron Judge is in the lineup, he is a difference maker. Okay, he is. And even if he's not hitting, he's making plays defensively. The Yankees have a lot of injuries. They've got injuries in every phase. They've got injuries in their bullpen. They've got injuries in the starting rotation. And they've got injuries in their starting lineup. Okay, and as of right now, everybody has slumped at the same time. All right? I mean, when we go down and you look at the averages, okay, for some of these guys, I mean, it's scary. Okay? Hicks, 187. Sanchez, 132. And Duhar, 138. Estrada, 190. Of course, Luke Voit, 318. And Clint Frazier's hitting well, 337. And Mike Talkman's at 309. But there's a lot of ones and twos. Low ones, high ones, and a 200. That's, you know, that's not getting it done. Okay? It's not getting it done. And we understand that you don't have your primetime players up there. But nevertheless, they need somebody in this lineup to get hot other than Voit and Frazier that can lengthen the lineup. Because right now, you're going to be able to pitch around Voit and Frazier and get everybody else out and stay in games. That's the tricky thing right here. If you're a Yankee fan, that's what concerns you. And once again, on the IL, according to what Brian Cashman said before the doubleheader tonight, that Judge will be out longer than he was the first time on the IL with this calf. Well, he was out, what, it was on the 10-day. So that means 2 weeks. 3 weeks? So that means he and Torres could be coming back at the same time. And Giancarlo Stanton is at least another week away. At least. Who's going to light up this offense and get this team going and put them on their back until these guys come back? That's the question.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Hardy C for Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. Taking your phone calls at 1-800-919-3776. Gary Sanchez walked with the bases loaded to give the Yankees a 3-1 lead, and then Mike Tauchman grounded into a double play, running down the baseline, slammed his helmet on the ground. That could have been a big inning for the Yankees. Mets had Jay Reese Familia warming up in the bullpen to back up Peterson. So we move on. Yankees leading by the score of 3-1 as the Mets come to bat in the bottom of the third. D. Will is in Harlem. D. Will, you're next on 98.7 ESPN.
Brother Larry, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, D. Will. What's up, partner?
Everything's good, man. It's been a minute since we spoke. Last time I called you, and I remember distinctly, I was coming from the Garden. It was March 7th prior to the pandemic, and I was joking with you about Alonzo Trier, who's no longer on the club, so it's a moot point now, about him being in witness protection. But today I'm a dollar short the day late because I thought Kyrie was still rolling with us, but I see yesterday Joe was telling me it was his last day. So peace and blessings to that young brother.
Definitely.
As he moves on. And I just wanted to also just quickly commend you. I'm always listening, though I'm not calling frequently as everybody else does. I'm always pleased to hear everybody's voices and their opinions. Well, 95% of the time anyway. But I wanted to thank you, man, for adding some levity and some calm into a situation with the situation that happened in Minneapolis. That created all this drama that we had recently. And a lot of these callers, I understand, they're shooting from the hip. A lot of them are young, you know, younger than us. And, you know, when you're a baby boomer, you kind of can look at things a little differently because we've seen this play before with different actors, same script.
Yeah, it's true. Unfortunately, D. Will, you're right. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
But jumping back to sports, something that's been on my mind, and I just wanted to touch base to you about it. I was in my car in the rain laughing earlier. I think you were talking to Trey and his wife. I'm not sure. I caught
Buddha
the middle of
wife.
It.
Buddha.
Yeah, Buddha. Oh, it was Buddha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I felt her frustration. It was so funny. But all jokes aside, I hope they hold on to Knicks, that is. I hope they hold on to their draft pick. You know, I tell the cats at work all the time, I said, listen, man, I remember when they won their last championship. I was 17. I said, you do the math. And that was 1973.
Yeah.
So if they draft smartly and they seem to have the right crew to do this, Larry, and that's what I want to get your opinion on. Mm-hmm. They brought in a lot of name people, the guy from Utah, Worldwide, everybody else. I think this is a deep draft, even though there's no one obvious guy to pick like last year where it was a no-brainer to go with Zion. I think they can do something if they just hold their horses. They're not one player away. We both know this.
Yeah.
You know, and those of us who know anything about basketball know this. But they can build quickly, and we can make some things happen, man. Listen, have yourself a great weekend, brother. I'll be talking to you soon. Shout out once again to Kyrie, and may he do well with his podcast.
All right. Thank you, D. Will. Thanks for the phone call. And before I answer that, I'll take care of Kyrie before we leave the air tonight, before we turn things over to Anita Marks and Weekend Wager at the top of the hour. I'll give you my thoughts on Kyrie and losing a member of our squad here at 98.7 ESPN. Here's the thing, D. Will, and you make a great point. It looks as though, as a Knicks fan, you can, and this is how I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it as being cautiously optimistic. Okay, because there are people in the front office that people around the league have a lot of respect for. And it just seems as though that when you talk to folks around the NBA, the names that the Knicks now have, people are like, that's a good move. Now, you know, not disparaging other folks, But that's not always been the comment in responded to some of the moves that the Knicks have made. It's not always been the comment. Tom Thibodeau, obviously, is your head coach. Kenny Payne was brought in out of Kentucky. And obviously, with him and Johnny Bryant and Mike Woodson, is back. So obviously, that's going to add something to your defensive end, along with what Tom Thibodeau brings to the table. And it looks as though that Thibodeau will also add Andy Greer and Dice Yoshimoto, who's been with him in Chicago and Minnesota. So you look at that, and it just seems as though that these are guys who are able to help as far as trying to develop the young players that you have. Okay. And if there's one thing that the Knicks have not really done a good job over the past couple of years, and that is, all right, developing their players. And you're looking at a team that's got a bunch of draft choices. They've got three this year. And so you have an opportunity to draft some players and get a chance to see what you have. And also the young players that you have on the team, you get a chance to see what you've got with them and work to get them better. All right. So those are the things that you're looking for. And hopefully that's what these guys will do. Ultimately, listen, all the kudos in the world don't mean a thing if you don't have the talent and your team continues to underperform as these Knick teams have done over the past couple of years. All right. So that's where we are. But at least when you look at the possibilities, you feel better as a Knick fan. You feel better than what you did before. Now the question becomes, what's the game plan, right? You have a coach in Tom Thibodeau. And I'll get to the calls in a minute. You have a coach in with Tom Thibodeau, and you know his identity, right? His reputation, his identity. The team is going to be a tough defensive team. You know that. Tom Thibodeau, Mike Woodson on the staff, it's going to be a tough defensive team, okay? It's going to be a tough defensive team. Does it mean that they're going to be the best defensive team in the league? No, but it means that they will be a better defensive team than they've been for a while. That's a positive. The next step will be to find and bring on this team some shot makers. That's the next step. You got to get some people that put the ball in the basket. Defense is great. Okay? But if nobody's scoring, you're still losing. You just won't get blown out. All right? That's the only thing. But defense helps you. It helps you. And here's where it helps you. It helps you during runs and hopefully late in the game when you need stops in that fourth quarter, it helps you there. But before you get to that point, okay, before you get to that point, you got to be able to put the ball in the basket. And so it's about talent. I don't care how good the coaches are. I don't. It really helps if you've got talent. Now, you know, and obviously a coach can, when you have something to work with and you add your style to it and what you bring to the table, that elevates your team, that elevates what they're able to do. And the other thing that you want to do is, and I've said this a lot, and I know people are like, oh, here he goes again, but it's true. The best coaches adapt to the talent they have. They don't try to make you fit what they do. Okay, they don't. That's not what they do. It's not what they do. Those Knick teams of the 90s, they were able, under Pat Riley, he adapted to what their strengths were. And yeah, there's some things that he added from his standpoint and what he loved to do and some things that he added to that personnel. But the quickest thing to say is, he knew that wasn't the Showtime Lakers. It was no Magic Johnson walking through that door. All right. But the players he had, what they did, the strengths they did, they were physical. They pounded the boards. They loved to play great defense. And that's what he did. That was their strengths. And even that team didn't score a lot of points. Okay? So, you know, that's why I say defense is important, but it's about scoring the basketball. And in this era of three-point makers and the three ball, I mean, you know, Toronto Raptors scored 150 points in a playoff game. Okay? 150 points in a playoff game. You never saw it. You'd have to go triple overtime back in the day to get 150 points in a playoff game. Because the game in the postseason slowed down. It became a half-court battle. That's the way it was back in the day. It was a half-court battle. So for you to have 150 points, as Toronto was able to do in the postseason, that's about hitting the three. That's about being in transition. That's about continuing to play your game. Okay? And that's the way it is. So as a Knicks fan, if you really want this team to, if you're really looking forward to seeing what this team is going to be, if you're really looking forward to see how this team is going to get better with this group of coaches, I think you're encouraged because you've got some teachers coming on this staff. And when you have young players and an organization that has routinely, consistently underdeveloped their players, partially because there wasn't a big transition with steady coaching so that you knew what the identity of your team was. So that was part of it. But now you look, hopefully, with these coaches you're bringing in, you'll be able to have that transition and you'll be able to see where there's, you know, the ability to build. This is what we want to do. This is what we want to do in year two. This is what we want to do in year three. Yes, we know we have to have success because, you know, sports is a success-oriented business. And if you don't succeed, it could cause a problem in your five-year game plan. But what you really want to do is try to build confidence and build a lasting thing where you've got some continuity from year to year to year where players know, okay, this is where we are. This is what we're going to do. That would be helpful. It really would.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.